Welcome back to Pax Europiana, to our debate about Europe's future, Europe's past, the history and our cooperation and role in the world. And this time it's the section about EU days, and I'm talking now about the 26th of January. That's an important date, especially for India, for it's the Indian Republic Day, celebrating the Indian Republic's constitution, announced and fully valid then in the year 1950, and also the first declaration of independence by India, by the Indian Congress. It was not leading to independence, but it was the first declaration that the Indians wanted to be independent. That was in the year 1930. So the 26th of January plays a very important role in the history of India. And as India and Europe have been so connected always in history, and play a so big role for each other in many aspects, I will explain in this podcast, it's very important that we have an EU day for India, for our friendship with India, for celebrating the Great Republic of India together all over Europe, and also to be aware about our common history, about our common issues and the tragic aspects of our past, that the Europeans also apologize for the crimes we did in India, against the Indians in history. All Europeans should do that, but especially, I think, the Portuguese, the French, the British, and others as well. Yeah. So we have this tragic history, but we also have a common history, and we are the great democracies, Europe, America, India, absolutely democratic market economies. India had its flirt with socialism, but it has led to the tragic situation India is in today still. Yeah? It's getting better, but compared to other regions of the world, India is still relatively poor. A lot of it is the inheritance of colonialism, but a lot is also intrinsic choices of policy in India, when India chose basically, for many reasons, the socialist economic camps, and also in 71, for strategic reasons, India went more and more towards the Soviet world, and that's of course led to 20 lost years for India. And not only gradually after the end of the Cold War, India is recovering, and now actually it's reforming, it's opening, and it's gradually turning into a full market democracy. And so it's also time for India to join the OECD and obviously to leave BRICS, these Russian-led networks of anti-OECD kind of rogue nations, where India doesn't belong to. India is part of the free world. India is a market democracy. India should be in OECD. It's also one of the great anomalies of the world governance that India is not in the United Nations Security Council. I cannot understand exactly why that is. I know the reason, because it was created. The United Nations were created in the year in 1944 and 45, the San Francisco Conference, mainly 45. At that time, obviously, India was still part of the British Empire, and the British were anyhow represented as in the Security Council, so no need for India. So nobody asked the Indians, who were anyhow also at that time much more than the British. Huh? So ultimately, that is the reason. And India then became independent, not by the great will of the Westminster Parliament to grant independence to India, but it happened mainly because the British went bankrupt in the year 47 because the enormous costs of World War II, and that has led basically was funded by the United States. Then there was this agreement, the Anglo-American Agreement, then the crisis of the sterling, and then in 15th of August, it was basically bankrupt. And then it had basically to hand over the Greek Civil War to the Americans, and India was handed over to the Indians in a rather chaotic way, not very well prepared. And many people, unfortunately, died in these separation wars and in the expulsion of population and this population exchange. A very terrible policy and a very badly prepared independence. So it's better to celebrate the 26th of January. We can also celebrate the independence of, obviously, it's wonderful to be independent. But I have to say that the way this independence was handled when you look back on it, it was very chaotic and a lot of people died. So it's a rather somber occasion. So the 26th of January it is. And it should be also a reminder that we have also a lot of common culture. Obviously, India has always been an important trading partner of the European continent. And especially it was obviously in the times of the British control. It was a very big source of wealth for the United Kingdom and with it also for the rest of Europe, because we were trading with the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom becoming richer because of India. So we are all very connected ultimately. And that's actually a positive thing. And obviously many of the things the British did in India, from the Amritsar massacre to the Bengali famine, to so many other crimes, I hope they have appropriately apologized already. I'm not sure. It's a pity that Boris Johnson couldn't go to the 26th of January jubileum when he was now invited because of Corona. But I hope that he also comes with the necessary contrition and apologies for the colonial crimes of the United Kingdom in India. Also, other countries have to apologize, the Portuguese in Goa, the French, the Spanish, you know, and there's a lot of things which went wrong. So no doubt there is now time to get it right. Yeah? What we can do? Let's conclude a free trade agreement. A free trade agreement, a mutually agreed commercial peace treaty between the EU and India, and also between the UK and India. It's, you know, we are very close. We have a very good cooperation. We basically have the same regulatory system after 48 years together, the British and the Europeans. And so also the Indian regulatory system, I think, is basically in many aspects still based on the British imperial system, I would suppose. So it's not so far distant. So we can rather easily conclude a trade agreement which can be parallel and fast. And again, the British can be the gate crasher, I say, the gate opener. But maybe Brexit via this aspect has a very positive consequence whenever it's said the British have left. But if now the British and the Indians conclude this FTA, it's basically the role model for the EU to do the same or best parallel. And it's anyhow a dream since a generation to get it done. I don't know where it ultimately stuck, this EU-Indian trade agreement. But let me make it very clear. If we as EU can do a trade agreement with the Communist Chinese now at the end of 2020, so-called China Investment Agreement, then I'm confident that we can do also with India, which is a market democracy. And it would be hugely beneficial economically for both sides, would help the reforms, would help India to join OECD. It would be very good also for Europe after the corona crisis and for the world economy to move forward. And it's a very beneficial thing to do. And I hope there will be wisdom in the European leadership to get this done as a priority of the Ursula von der Leyen Commission until 2024, together with the OECD membership. And that could be achieved, I think, very clearly. And also to invite India as one of the leading powers of the future in the Eurasian continent into the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe and Eurasia, I would call it. Central Asia is already there. And obviously Afghanistan, Pakistan, India should also join the OSCD. And I call for that. And I think that's very good. I have mentioned already that India should be in the United Nations Security Council with a permanent seat and also with veto power. I think that's very clear and that should go hand in hand in the reform of the UN, where Russia is obviously frozen because they are a rule breaker and not a rule giver. That cannot go hand in hand. So Russia must be frozen, India must be in, and India, please, it would be very nice if you can leave this kind of rogue organization, BRICS, and also the Shanghai Cooperation Agreement. Obviously, not to break relations with China. They are a partner in many things. But either it can be merged, the Shanghai Cooperation Council, with the OSCD, or the OSCD can have a second office and a second headquarter in Shanghai. There are many, many potential settlements. But it should not be that the Chinese rule the world, in a sense, with their institutions. And we have really very equitable institutions, like the OECD, which is working very well. But please, India, don't sign a free trade agreement with the Eurasian Economic Union, because that's our opponent here in Europe. These Russian-led institutions, they might sound interesting to have good understanding with Russia, but always remember that Russia is in Syria, in Ukraine, in Georgia, in Libya, aggressively waging war against these people and against Western interests. So please, just because you're a bit far away, you shouldn't sit with such aggressive state. So the free trade agreement and the OECD, that is a really great opportunity for India, but also it's a great opportunity for the world economy. Imagine India is now per capita at about $2,000 per head, per capita, GDP. That means the prosperity is nobody in Europe, no European state is as poor as India is today. And that's basically a level of poor African countries. Yeah? And Russia and China are now at this world average, about 11,000 GDP. You can make this calculation quite easily. It's also on the World Bank websites. But in principle, we are close to 8 billion people. We have 86 trillion GDP. So it's about close to $11,000 per capita. And India is at 2,000. So five and a bit is basically the potential. India is now already the fifth largest economy, about close to 3 trillion GDP. That's about the size of the United Kingdom. So, but India has 1.4 billion people, and England, United Kingdom has only 67 million. So in a short version, India could easily produce about five times of the GDP. That would be 15 trillion. And that would add a whooping 12 trillion to global GDP. I know it cannot be done tomorrow, but the Chinese have made a similar kind of, even higher in 20 years from 2001 to 2020. So in a normal development, I think by 2040, and India should have this GDP of about 15 trillion, like what China is close to now. Obviously, China will grow as well, so overtaking will take longer. But if you really develop into a market economy and a full market democracy, I think, which you are already, but under OECD condition, membership, maybe it can be even faster. But that means that we easily cross the 100 trillion GDP rather soon by 2030, and also the Indians will be much better, but everybody will be much better. And think that joining this free world trading system is a very logical step for India, because you have been part of the world trading system fully until 66, even of the sterling area. That was really until 66 when you were basically devaluating after the Indian-Pakistani war. It was a real big disaster, actually, this leaving of the sterling area, and it had led to a lot of consequences, and also the positive one, because the United Kingdom had then no other choice but really to join the European Union. Now they are rich and happy again, and they have left. That's a strategy. But what I would like to say with all this is that the potential of Indian integration into the world trading system fully as a market democracy in OECD, but also with a free trade agreement with the UK and with the EU, that's really very concrete. And this will add this $12 trillion additionally to the global GDP over the next 15 years. And that's amazing potential. That's really fantastic. India is already, in many aspects, a wonderful working economy now, with the vaccine production, with the pharmaceutical sector, with the generica. You're doing so much for the world already. But I think you can triple your GDP by 2030. You can maybe reach this 15 by 2040. I mean, that's an amazing thing. I would also not only to talk about this wonderful prospect, but also about India now coming to the G11. That's the new thing, I think, after the G7. And now also Boris Johnson has already invited India to attend the next G7 meeting, and it had led a little bit to some disquiet with Japan and some discussions about the formats. I'm fully in favor of India joining the G7. That's absolutely justified. It's the fifth largest economy, there's no doubt. But don't forget also, it first of all, it takes then also global responsibility for the financial system. That's important also to be ready to be generous if something is needed. But also it takes then a commitment to really join OECD and not hang out with Putin and this aggressor around and somehow redefine your relation with China. And leave BRICS, absolutely. Attending G7 and BRICS, that doesn't work. So I'm also in favor of India joining the global partnership agenda of NATO, where Pakistan is basically already in. And so how can that work? It must be, in a way, the same situation like we have in NATO, in Europe, Greece and Turkey since 52. I understand your two states are very toxic relationship and you had many wars with each other and a lot of tragedy and open conflict is happening over Kashmir and Punjab and other issues. But thing is like this, yeah. Here is the thing. I think it's much better if you join the Western world also in defense and security, but in the framework of this NATO global partnership and profit and benefit from the mechanisms which we have developed to de-escalate the conflict between Greece and Turkey. And a similar situation is possible whenever in a different context, but in the same framework of de-escalation between Pakistan and between India. And you can both be Western allies. Nobody has to run to China. Nobody has to run to Russia. Please, you can both be Western partners, if not allies, and we can make sure that there will be no escalation. And if there is one, there is a mechanism to really diffuse it also in the OECD, and that's much better for the long-term prosperity of the world. So, what else to say? Imagine always how important India was at that time for the British. It was the great game of the 19th century. It's always quite impressive to imagine also that India was at that time Pakistan, India, it was Bangladesh, Burma. So that's today, basically the combined population of British India is almost close to 2 billion people. One quarter of the population of the world today is living in these states, what we can call South Asia and former British India. So that was really very important for Britain at that time. And it could be again very important for global prosperity in the post-corona world. And that's why I say we should have a little bit more awareness in Europe. We should have an EU day also to celebrate the Republic Day of India and also celebrate our friendship, our cooperation, understand what we can do together. Recently, it seems so distant, India, like a different planet in a way. And we are so concerned only with our European issues. But we can really reach out more to the world and build this global partnership and fix and repair a little bit some aspects of the global governance system, like, for example, India, because it was also an ally of the victorious nations of the United States, of the Allies in the Second World War. Indian soldiers have fought on all fronts of the Second World War and of the First World War, and they have contributed greatly to the victory. And so why then India, just because it was 2 years late, is not in the UN Security Council, is really very hard to explain. And then obviously, because that's the fact, in India always running to Russia as an alternative power and as the permanent revanchist power, that's really not a good strategy. And we need to make sure when we want to build a better world, it starts here, right now and there, with this day on the 26th of January, celebrate India and get all these things which I've mentioned done and make sure there is a free trade agreement until 2024. Mrs. Ursula von der Leyen, please, and President or Prime Minister Modi, sit together, make a video call and get these remaining issues done. I'm sure they can be done. And if we can do China with this investment agreement, we can also do the EU-India partnership agreement. And that's really extremely important. And please, India, join OECD. And then we can do all these wonderful things which are so important, like, for example, connecting our two continents by land much more. Actually, my uncle, he even in the 60s, as a hippie, he was driving to India. Many Europeans did that at that time. And it was maybe, but it was possible. Today we have hostile Russia, hostile Iran. It's very difficult. So what we need to do an Indian-European interconnectivity agenda, similar like the Belt and Road Initiative. We need to discuss and fund formally with all the institutions to have, together with Pakistan, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, the Caspian Sea tunnel, and to be ready to via the South Caucasus to go to Turkey and to Europe by rail, by maritime connections, by this tunnel, and get this strategically going. It cannot be that only China does it, and then we complain, oh, China, China, China. No, this is our task as well. This is also the Indian task. This is also the European task. This is a global task. It's not only for India to build infrastructure in Central Asia. No, 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 no. Even if it's complicated, yes, it's expensive. But, you know, when we are great nations, great markets, great opportunities, that's why we are united to do these things. And not only to build national infrastructure or superhighways in France and Germany or under the tunnels under the Alps, but really make strategically sure that goods and services and people between India and the European continent can go effectively connected via modern infrastructure without passing Russian or Iranian territory, because these are both hostile states. Yeah. So here's the logic, and that's what I call for. Also then to support OSZE Pakistan and Afghanistan, and also these two countries also to be in the Eastern Partnership of the that's a more a group exercise with the Central Asian countries, but with India a very specific strategic partnership between the European Union and India, like we have now concluded. Now that was quite a good success of Mr. President Michel. Charles Michel, he has concluded this ASEAN strategic partnership, and the same is now necessary for India. And we should not let authoritarian regimes in Myanmar, today there was this coup of the military, or in the Philippines, or in Laos, or in Cambodia, we should not allow them to distract this agenda. These are temporary setbacks, they are very tragic, but to all extent and purposes, anyhow, Burma, Laos, Cambodia are very much Chinese client states at the moment and have been for some time. So we cannot hold up the whole agenda for ASEAN partnership or Indian partnership because of specific crises in some of the Chinese client states. Yeah, and so that's the short version. I want to congratulate this great nation of India for the Republic Day. I think it's a wonderful and amazing country. I've unfortunately never been, but I follow this politics now very closely on Twitter. And this is my call, India, reconnect physically and also institutionally with the free world. You are part of it. You have always been part of it. It's now that you take also the seat on the big table where you should sit at the UN Security Council. That may take some time because of the Russian and Chinese veto, but the OECD, the OSCD, and also the G11, there is nobody having a veto on that. So please welcome India, happy Republic Day, and let's celebrate it all over Europe together on this day on the 26th of January. Thanks a lot. All the best.